Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mark and Kitchen.
To me, what's interesting is hearing Belichick and Tom in the presser after say, you know what, we're just going through our normal routine. I just threw it to the open man. What you did was you used this as a preseason game to get AB caught up.
All right, take it easy, buddy. You don't want to do that.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, no, he don't. He's just playing.
No, I ain't playing.
Yes, he is.
No, I'm not.
Yes, he is.
I'm not playing.
Yes, he
drop the gun.
He's just my cousin. We're just talking.
AB is a guy that plays outside, but he's capable of being a slot receiver. He's got moves and the kind of things that he put, the quickness of foot that he has.
I disagree.
This is awesome.
Peter, I'm freaking out.
Don't ruin it for me.
On Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, welcome back to the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 FM WEEI. I'm Nick Coy filling in for Mark Dondero. Ben, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
That was my best attempt at Mark at starting the show.
Oh, he's a screamer.
He's a screamer.
And it's fast.
And now you've made it so weird. So you don't even know.
It's all energy and pace, and it's fantastic. I'm sitting here like, okay, what are we going to do? So one, obviously. And then he starts yelling at me like, all right, I'm in. Let's go.
Let's go.
Now it's time for Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Coming at ya!
All right, hour two of the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI, Mark Dondero, Ben Kitchen. Kitch, I'll say this.
Yes.
We were just talking about Eli Manning and the prospect of him getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I'll tell you that based on everything I've heard, and this is just my opinion, based on what I've heard, the consensus seems to be he's getting in.
So dumb.
I mean, do you agree with that? Based on what you've heard everybody say? And
based on what I've heard, yes. Because I keep hearing the same thing. Two Super Bowl MVPs. Beating Tom Brady, that doesn't... Stop it. This isn't tennis.
Right.
That's not how this works. It's never how it's worked.
Tom Brady, using that as
evidence of something.
In his second year, Tom Brady beat the greatest show on turf with a guy that won an MVP and another guy that won another MVP, Marshall Faulk and Kurt Warner, and they have the nickname. They won the Super Bowl 2 years earlier. I mean, nobody talks about that.
Okay. We don't really talk about Tom Brady beating Peyton Manning in the playoffs a bunch and in the regular season a bunch.
Here's what
we really don't. We talk about how the defense handled them.
Here's what I wanted to say.
That's what's actually important.
Correct. It was never about Brady really beating Manning. It was about Belichick and the defense beating Manning. That's always what that narrative was. But that's not what I wanted to say. This is what I want to say. I don't know how, and maybe you can convince me otherwise.
Yeah.
If Eli Manning gets into the Hall of Fame, or let's just say the consensus is he's getting in.
Sure.
I don't know how, if you're going to have a conversation about Eli Manning going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you do not have a conversation about Julian Edelman. They're the same sort of scenario where you had unbelievable... But the thing is...
No, there's a difference. Well, there's a major difference.
Well, hold on. I get he's a quarterback.
Yeah.
So if that's the major...
That's not my difference.
Well, okay. Because Julian Edelman, over the course of his career during the regular seasons, has been a lot more consistent at his position than Eli Manning has been at his. And then you factor in, oh, he's been a Super Bowl MVP. He's made big plays. He's won 3 rings. He could have been the MVP of Super Bowl 49. And what's that record, almost record he holds? He is second to only Jerry Rice. And what is it, yards or receptions in the postseason?
I think it's both, dude.
So don't tell me that you're not supposed to have a conversation about Julian Edelman if you're going to have the conversation, or if Eli Manning at 116 and 116 is getting in, and a guy that had two flashes in the pan. And then other than that, was 0-for in playoff games. What's the big difference to you?
The difference between the two of them
is
that... I don't care about Pro Bowls because someone gets hurt and all of a sudden the next guy up's a Pro Bowler. That doesn't mean anything. All Pro means something to me. Pro Bowl doesn't mean a whole lot of much to me.
I don't think either have ever been All Pro. I know Edelman hasn't.
No, but here's the difference. Edelman has produced a season where he was an elite wide receiver. I'm not saying he was the best, second best, or third best, but he might have been the top five. Eli's never been the top five as a quarterback, ever. Ever.
So what do you say? That Edelman should be in the conversation?
It's more reasonable to put Edelman in that conversation than Eli.
Well,
now, I've reflected on this. Edelman should not be a Hall of Famer, yep. At least right now, based off what he's done so far. I was dealing with the afterglow of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But now, as I've looked back on it, I go, no. Let's be real here. If I'm going to have this strict guideline to get into the Hall of Fame, I can't all of a sudden be a homer about it, because really, Edelman does not belong in the Hall of Fame. He's had a nice career.
Mm-hmm.
But Hall of Fame, it's supposed to be the best of the best. And if you are never in the top five of your position at any point in your career, that should be automatic elimination. Cool, you won the Super Bowl. It's a team sport. You won the Super Bowl. That's great. You performed pretty well, admirably, in those games. You had nice runs along the way. But for the entire rest of your career, you were average. How does that get you into the Hall of Fame? How?
In our defense, and maybe specifically in my defense, all we talked about before was, should Edelman be in the conversation?
True.
We didn't talk about should he be in.
That's true. That's true.
I don't think...
And I did say he should be in the conversation.
Yeah, and he should be. But, I think you should have a conversation with him.
Well, I'll throw cold water on that conversation pretty quickly, but I'm open to the conversation because there's something there.
And Eli Manning, absolutely a conversation. We can have the conversation. But I agree with both points. I don't think either should get in because... No Pro Bowls, no All-Pro. I mean, you weren't the greatest at your position. As much as I value postseason performance, you know, that means something to me. But that means more if it could get you over the hump. See, the perfect example. This is the perfect example. Ty Law is the perfect example. Where what he did in the postseason, that's why I couldn't believe it took him that long to get in. Because what he did in the playoffs should have gotten him over the hump sooner.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he's doing... He didn't rely only, though, on playoff performance. Edelman and Manning, essentially, are only relying on playoff performance. That's why Law got in, and they shouldn't. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
That's where I stand there. What Law did, his regular season accolades and how he performed in the regular season year in and year out.
Damn good.
Damn good, but maybe on the fence of being a Hall of Famer, maybe. I don't have his stats in front of me. Do you have any All-Pros? How many All-Pros did Law make, Ty Law? Pro Bowls.
Two first-team All-Pros.
All-Pros.
But here's another thing that's very important when you're starting to look at it and you're starting to judge the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You go on Pro Football Reference, they have a section where you can look it down, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame for every decade puts out a team. And those guys are almost all Hall of Famers.
Yep.
Ty Law for the 2000s was a second-team Hall of Famer. The problem for Ty Law is that he overlapped from the 90s to the 2000s, and he was never the best at his position because he had Dion, particularly even in the mid-90s, he had Dion, and then he had Champ Bailey, who was better than Ty.
Charles Woodson, too, was in
there. Charles Woodson, there's a couple of guys, but Ty Law was always in the top five of his position.
I think, though, where Eli Manning is getting so much credit for those two postseason runs, I don't think it's enough to overcome some of what he lacked in the regular season. That is why Ty Law, what he did in the regular season combined with the playoff performance, should have gotten him in, and it did. That's what got him in, because you can't just go based on playoff performance. As much as I value playoff performance, and I think it should mean something, it can't just be that. Law had done enough, maybe just enough, but enough in the regular seasons to look at his playoff performances and say, and then he did this in the Super Bowl and did this against Manning in the championship game, and we've got to put him in. And that's why I think I would have put him in. That's why he's in. Manning, not enough. Julian Edelman, not enough in the regular seasons.
Eli's play, you watch it objectively, not very good. Eli's performance and play, average at best. To me, the way his career, particularly those two Super Bowls, played out, it doesn't strengthen his case for the Hall of Fame. It strengthens Tom Coughlin's case for the Hall of Fame, because Tom Coughlin led those Giants teams and he had that as his quarterback.
Sure. And look, Eli made, don't get me wrong, there were plays he made in Green Bay and in San, I mean, they went and won all those games on the road, all those championship games. Who else did they beat along the way? I could, obviously the 49ers stands out, and that game that was 2 degrees in 2000, did they beat both the Packers both times? Brett Favre once and Aaron Rodgers the next time? I think they did.
I'm double checking right now.
Okay. They won some impressive road games. I know they beat the Falcons and Matt Ryan at home one of those years. I think that was the second time.
They did beat the Packers both times. That's right. They beat the Packers in the conference championship game.
The first time. Yeah.
And then it was the divisional round the second time.
That was the year that, 07, that year that Tom Coughlin's face almost fell off. Remember, it was that
yes.
close?
They beat the Buccaneers, Cowboys, and Packers.
In 07?
In 07, which, other than the Packers, that's really not that great of a run.
That's true.
That really isn't that great of a run. Buccaneers.
Yeah. Blech. I don't even know who's on that team.
And the Cowboys, that was the inept Cowboys that had a ton of talent that just
weren't good. Started 7-0.
Yeah. You know, second run, you had Falcons, Packers, 49ers. I'll take that Packers team over the 07 Packers team.
And that 49ers with Harbaugh was a good team.
Yeah.
And they went out there. That was a good team. So, give him credit. They played well. He played well in those games. But just not enough. And, I mean, I just don't know how you have that conversation without having a Julian Edelman conversation. If we're going to have that conversation. Because Edelman's been more consistent in the regular season.
I just don't get it. I just don't get, you watch this guy play for 16, 17 years, whatever it is. Week in and week out, he's not that good.
He did it in New York, though. How many people wilt under the New York lights? New York
he wanted
changes
to be
you.
There.
It changes
Listen,
you.
I give him no credit for that because he wanted to be there. He refused to play in San Diego.
Yeah.
Like and held them hostage, essentially. I'm not giving him credit for New York. You didn't take the opportunity at hand right in front of you.
Well, you don't have to. People will, though.
I know.
The fact that he did it for the G-men, will give him credit for
we're
that.
We're talking about my opinion, not their opinion. Yeah. Listen, the guy wasn't very good. He was average. He was an average NFL quarterback for the entirety of his career. He had moments of greatness.
Bear it out.
He had moments of greatness. That's it. He was never top five in his position. If you look at fantasy points, he was top five once, top six once, and then outside the top 10 in his position every other year of his career, if that matters to you.
And how about this? Let's just point this out, okay? I believe it was 2008. You'll have to look this up. Go look up the 2008 Giants if you can. 2008, they were on a tear, the Giants.
Yeah, they finished 12-4.
They were 10-1 or something, okay? Plaxico Burress shoots himself.
Yep.
Never the same after that. They went down the drain, essentially. Is that a Hall of Famer that was really able to make everyone around him better in the face of adversity when you lose one of your top weapons? I mean, they were never the same after Burress went out.
And when I look at it, those three losses they had after Burress went out, their offense was terrible. 14 points, 8 points, 9 points. The opponent in each of those three losses in their final four, they went 1-3 in their final four games that year. The opponent only put up 20 each time.
Yeah.
And they couldn't put up more than 20 points.
That just doesn't scream to me some legend. And he had, and then obviously later in his career, he had Odell Beckham, and they couldn't really do anything there. I was convinced. I'm still shocked. When Beckham, that rookie year, made that catch against Dallas, you remember the big catch, the one-handed, I was like, what kind of catch is this guy going to make to beat the Patriots in a Super Bowl? I mean, he's going to catch it upside down with his feet, and that's how the Patriots are going to lose the Super Bowl the next time they play the Giants. Thankfully, it never happened. Let's talk real quick to JP in North Providence about Eli. JP, good morning.
Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch crew there.
Okay.
Glad you're back.
Thanks, brother.
Hey, listen. Joe Willie Namath. I have to put the Willie in because I'm 60, so we call them that. He got in, honestly, one game, one Super Bowl, played in New York, had the big name, flashy character, was not that great of a quarterback. He got in. I think the point you just made gets Eli in over the top. Played in New York.
Yep.
The family name, I think Eli gets in, but I can't wait for the circus show when the whole Manning clan is out there doing it. And even funnier, we're not even talking about football for Sunday. We're worried about Eli Manning in 5 years getting in the Hall of Fame. That's how bad some of the games are tomorrow.
Oh, but God.
I think, you know, I honestly think he gets in. And I often wonder if Edelman is overlooked because they'll say, okay, it's Brady throwing to him. It's a system that you could put in any receiver, put him in a slot, he could get 10 catches a game and 900 yards. So I don't know if that hurts Edelman or not, but I think Manning's going to get in. And to be honest, he's not that far from a Kurt Warner as far as accolades. Now, day in and day out, Marino was a better quarterback. Warner got in, that's a whole other story. But I think Eli gets in just from the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Thanks
no,
for the call. We appreciate
listen,
it, JP.
JP, I think you're right. I think he does get in. Should he get in? Absolutely not. Do not ever, in any world, shape, or form, compare him to Kurt Warner. Ever. Kurt Warner.
He replaced Kurt Warner.
So what? They ended up getting two Super Bowls. I can't say it was a bad deal. Kurt Warner led the league three times in completion percentage, well over 65% every time. Kurt Warner, two-time All-Pro. Kurt Warner led the league in touchdowns twice, never led the league in interceptions, led the league in passing yards once, took two different teams to the Super Bowl, one team not all that good that he took to the Super Bowl. Kurt Warner, and don't forget, Kurt Warner didn't start playing in the NFL till he's 27, 28 years old. I think he was 28 when he finally actually got to really start with the Rams in that 99 season. Mm-hmm. He was a journeyman who had to figure... First, his story is 10 times better than Eli's story. You're the son, Eli's the son of a...
Son of royalty, brother of
the
royalty.
The son of an NFL quarterback, the brother of one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. You know, the story's not nearly as good. He wasn't even nearly as good as Kurt Warner was. Please. I know Kurt Warner had that weird down period in the middle of his career where he wasn't very good, but he came back and was very good at the end. JP brought up Joe Namath. Joe Namath should not be in the Hall of Fame. He was not a very good quarterback. He was often injured. The team outside of that 1 year wasn't terribly good. They had 2 years where they were pretty good, and outside of that, they were average. He wasn't all that good. He kept getting hurt. And he is in off the reputation of, we're going to win the damn game, and I guarantee it. And then I'm going to go wear nylons in an ad. He got in because of his fame. And a large part of that is New York. But you also have to understand, when he won the Super Bowl, when he beat the Colts in the Super Bowl, that was an even bigger upset. Because that's coming from another league that is completely viewed as inferior to the NFL. That's coming from the AFL. That's not a Giants team going up against an undefeated team. There's a difference there. What?
You said Giants. Jets.
No, I know. I'm saying it's not like Giants going up against the undefeated Patriots.
Right.
This was going up against... It was viewed as an XFL team going up against an NFL team, slightly. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's differences there. But Namath shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. I think we agree. I think we both agree. He's getting in because of New York, because the NFL world, the football world wants him in, but he shouldn't be in.
Kurt Warner never had a season where he threw below 60%. The lowest he ever had with a full season was 62.3 completion percentage. Eli Manning, his lowest as a full season, 52.8. That's a big difference.
This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
To Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, back here on the Mark and Kitchen Show. So the NFL is doing their Top 100 series. Is that what Bill Belichick is affiliated with? So that's part of what he...
with Rich Eisen and...
What was that for? Top 100 players?
I think so. I don't know. I remember them promoting this in August, and then it just kind of seemed to fade away.
Well, whatever. The NFL just released their list of top 100 plays of all time.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you what the top five are, and we're going to discuss them. Okay. The fifth... We'll start at number one. Number one is the Immaculate Reception, Steelers, and Raiders.
1972 Steelers-Raiders divisional game.
Divisional. Number two, Joe Montana to Dwight Clark. In the end zone.
The catch.
Championship game, Cowboys, 49ers in the...
1981.
81.
The season was the 81 season that happened in 82.
Number three, the David Tyree catch in Super Bowl 42. Number four was the Music City Miracle. I believe that was 1999 in the wild card round, the Doug Flutie game.
Yeah, it was Bills, Titans.
Number five was Malcolm Butler's interception in Super Bowl 49. Well, let me ask you first. If you're going to re-rank that list there, how would you rank them?
I would actually move Dwight Clark's The Catch to number one.
Why?
It was kind of a freak play all around. Joe rolled out, threw it over two really tall guys, and did a good job, and then Dwight jumped like nobody's jumped and snagged that ball. First of all, he jumped really high to get it, then he stretched almost as high as he could go to catch that ball. It was an unbelievable play. The situation to go to the Super Bowl, to kind of end the Cowboys' stranglehold of the NFC that they had kind of had for the 70s.
How much time was left in that game? Do you know? Do you remember?
There was like 13
under a minute.
Seconds left. 14, I don't know. It was under a minute left. I know the Cowboys got the ball back after that happened, but there was like two plays and that's it. I probably move that to number one. The Music City Miracle? No.
No.
Broken plays on kick returns or punt returns, they're not, they don't impress me all that. It's just a broken play. I mean, it's craziness. It doesn't blow my mind. Like, everyone, the Cal play, Cal versus Stanford in like 83 or whatever it was. Yeah. The band is on the field. It wasn't really that impressive. It was just, it was playground ball.
Great optics.
Yeah, it was playground
I'm
ball.
I'm still not sure that Music City Miracle wasn't a forward pass, too.
Yeah, that's
for
a good
me,
point.
Here's for me. To me, the number one play is the Malcolm Butler interception. Now, I understand. I'm from New England, Patriots fan, completely biased. I wasn't alive during some of those other ones, the Immaculate Reception or the Dwight Clark catch. But to me, that's the play. That is the play for a multitude of reasons. Number one, that play won the Super Bowl.
Yes.
None of those other plays won the championship. That play won the Super Bowl. Number two, let's talk about degree of difficulty of that play. If you give Malcolm Butler 10 opportunities to with nobody else on the field to catch that ball, if you say, all right, Russell Wilson, you drop back and you fire a pass right at Malcolm Butler with nobody else on the field, and Butler is going to sprint towards the football and try to catch it, he'd probably catch maybe 3 out of 10 with nobody else on the field. Degree of difficulty. How about this? The preparation that went into that play, to executing that play. It was well documented in one of those documentaries after the Super Bowl. Do your job or whatever. They practiced that. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't luck. It wasn't a fluke. They studied, they practiced, and they executed in the biggest moment when it mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would also factor in the magnitude of the win-loss scenario of Super Bowl 49. The Patriots ended up winning that game. And by doing so, they erased a lot of the demons that had been lingering after Spygate, and then with more recently Deflategate during that stretch run there. And they stopped the Seahawks, which was a dynasty in the making, and for my money, the best team that the Patriots faced of all in any of their Super Bowls.
Oh, absolutely.
That Seahawks team. They had won the year before. They were going for 2 in a row. They were young. They were one of the next dynasty if they won that. I mean, they would have had 2 in a row. First team to do so since the Patriots, and they would have 2 straight. So
I you know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to hedge. I would go with the
Rams.
The Rams are slightly better because their offense was so overwhelming, but they were the two best teams they played. They're certainly the best defense they played. I understand your point. It was the Super Bowl. It was the end of the Super Bowl, and that should matter, and that's why when you look at these are all playoff moments at the very least. You know, you talked about the difficulty of what he did. I'll go back to the catch between Montana and Clark and the difficulty what both of them did on that play. Joe rolls out to the right. He's not a 6'5", 6'6" quarterback, so he's got to get the ball over Ed Too Tall Jones, who's huge. He's rolling to the right as he throws, and not only is he rolling to the right, but he throws off his back foot, leaning back, and gets the appropriate air on that ball. It was not a throwaway ball. That was a design play. But the degree of difficulty from Montana's standpoint, high. The degree of difficulty from Dwight Clark's standpoint, pretty high.
Sure. It was a great play.
And it gets them to the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
It's important.
But this one decided the game, and it decided the game. I mean, the Patriots beat the Seahawks, the team that would have been the next dynasty. It arguably ended their run, the Seahawks' run. And then, I didn't even bring this up, how about the shock factor? I mean, the Seahawks were about to win the game.
Yeah.
Everybody thought they were going to win. I thought they were going to win. Everybody thought, this is it.
Yep.
They're going to punch it in and win. And then before you could even think, blink, the Patriots won the game. And that play is what changed everything. I mean, that was, when you factor it all together, that was the most amazing play, most shocking, most incredible play in the history of the NFL for my money, that it won a Super Bowl.
Well, the Immaculate Reception shouldn't be number one regardless, because it was a bad call by the refs. They misinterpreted the rule that was on the books at the time. It was a bad rule, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But when you know that full story, even the ref goes, we're in Pittsburgh. We got to get the hell out of here. Seriously. Like, they made that call on the field. It touched two guys. It shouldn't. You couldn't do that. The ball couldn't touch the defender and the offensive player in the air at the same time. And then a third person could come in and get it. The ball was supposed to be dead at that point. That was the rule at that time. Terrible, weird rule.
Yeah.
So it was inappropriately applied. So therefore, should you really count it? Even though what Franco Harris did was pretty damn impressive. He scooped that ball from the shoelaces.
Sure.
Came out of nowhere to do it. But I don't think it should be number one.
And I think, would you say, the Adam Vinatieri kick in the snow was 18?
Yeah,
way too low.
So you want the rest of the Patriots involved plays from the list? So we'll go with Patriot negative first. Number 79, William the Refrigerator Perry, that Super Bowl, that touchdown in Super Bowl 20 should not be on the list, partly because Dick is such a fool and gave him that touchdown instead of Walter Payton. I'd take it off the list just for that.
Yeah.
Number 59, Barry Sanders' touchdown run against the Patriots, where I forget the name of the defensive player that he had yo-yoing back and forth. It was an amazing run.
I'm going to look that one up.
Number 42, the Miami Miracle. Should not be. No. Again, broken plays, they don't do it for me. Number 31, Manning to Manningham. Should be higher on that list because it was one of the greatest stories you'll ever see. Number 10, Philly Special. Should not be nearly as high on this list.
You could put that on the list, but not that high.
And then, as we talked about, number 3, David Tyree's catch. Now, Patriots positive plays, number 99, the butt fumble.
That shouldn't be on the list. No. That was just complete ineptitude.
By the other team, not because you did something great.
Yeah.
Number 85, Ben Watson chases down Champ Bailey after the interception. Should not be on the list. Because if I'm going to look at another play of another guy chasing down another guy, I'm going to go Adam Vinatieri chasing down Herschel Walker on a kick return. Because Ben Watson chasing down Champ Bailey, that's two freak athletes running after each other. Great. Adam Vinatieri, that's a kicker chasing down one of the great athletes of all time in Herschel Walker.
Agree.
That should be there. Number 84, Moss one-handed catch over Revis. Great play. Great play. Number 22, Julian Edelman's Super Bowl 51 catch. Should be higher.
Yep.
Should be a top 10 play. Number 18, Adam Vinatieri's snowball kick. Great, unbelievable play. And as we said, number 5, Malcolm Butler's Super Bowl 49 interception.
You know what? I'll tell you a play I would have put on this list. Very low. Very low. I would have put freaking Dante Hightower's tackle of Marshawn Lynch right before that interception. That was a huge play. That play set up the interception.
Good play.
That play was, I mean, especially when you break it down the way they did in some of those documentaries, where how he bench pressed a defensive lineman off of him before making the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would have put it low, 90s.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're going to put the butt fumble on there instead of Dante Hightower,
getting too cute.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
So that's a play I definitely would have put on there.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some other ones. Just some of those touchdown passes from Brady to Moss in 2007. You could put more of them just on one-handed catch. What about the time he went up against three Dolphins and skied over all three of them?
Yeah.
That was an unbelievable catch.
I mean, I'm sure if we thought longer, we could think of other plays.
But they're well represented here. I mean, they're pretty damn well represented on this list.
Yeah. Well, they've been in how many big games? How many big playoff games?
A lot.
All right. When we get back, do you want to touch on the Red Sox? I mean, their season officially came to a close last night with them getting eliminated.
We're just shoveling
mathematically.
We're just shoveling some dirt on, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talked.
And I'm cool. We'll do it.
So yeah, we could talk about a little bit of them and what happened. Okay.
so depressing.
Yeah, you want to? You know what? I'll make a Red Sox point when we get back, and I'd love to hear what you have to say too. And we'll have the producer's question. You got a question, Dev? All right, producer's question coming up. This is the Mark and Cajun Show, 103.7 WEI.
We're back to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
They used to end every middle school dance with Stairway to Heaven.
What?
Everyone.
Did you go to middle school in 1976?
Every dance ended with Stairway to Heaven.
Most overrated song of all time.
Probably.
I'm sorry.
I can smell the gym still.
It's just
when I hear this song.
So unbelievably
overrated.
All right,
let's talk to Joe in Narragansett about Eli. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. Couple of things.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm a Boston fan except for one team.
Which team?
And the football Giants.
Ah, damn it!
Okay. Joe, you're from Narragansett. I'm assuming you're of a certain age, so I get it.
That is correct. Along with everyone else in my family.
I don't know why you couldn't have been like my dad, and when the Patriots came around, decided to adopt the Patriots, because my dad was a Giants fan. He was a Y.A. Tittle fan. But why couldn't you just...
I go back to the days of traveling to New York every Sunday to see the Giants play at Yankee Stadium. So,
okay.
You can kind of figure out
I gotcha.
Where I'm age-wise. And it's been passed on to my kids and so forth. There still are a lot of Giant fans around.
I know.
But let me just say, with regards to Eli Manning, Eli Manning is one of five quarterbacks to win two Super Bowls and two Super Bowl MVPs. And quite frankly, if Tom Brady, who I think is the greatest quarterback of all time, period, had played behind the line that the Giants that Eli has played behind for the last 6 years, Tom probably wouldn't be playing football. I mean, Jerry Reese did such a horrible job with this team that it's amazing that Eli is standing, never mind playing. And I really believe if he's not a first ballot, he's a second ballot Hall of Famer, period. Not even close.
I don't know if he gets in that quick.
I have watched every Giant game for years.
We both think he's getting in, but I don't know if he gets in that quick.
Listen,
thanks for the call, Joe.
He gets into the all tough quarterback Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Good God, he is tough as nails.
And I think he had the perfect temperament mentally for New York City.
Yes.
Give him credit for that.
Yes.
I mean, I don't. If you want to start getting into, would Brady have done this if he was there? I don't know. He had a lot of better weapons overall, I think, than Brady.
I have a steadfast rule when it comes to Hall of Fame. If you're never near the top or at the top of your position for a period of time in your career, you're not a Hall of Famer. And he was never in the top five of quarterbacks in the league. Listen. He did some great things. He had two great runs. I'm not taking it away from him. Just shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. We should have standards to get into the Hall of Fame. That's what kind of makes it great. That's what's worth having the discussion. But it's been bastardized over the last couple of years, whether it be football or whether baseball's even worse. Don't get me started there. But if you keep bastardizing it, it means less and less and less and less.
I will say this. I'll admit this. Eli Manning has had arguably the strangest career of all time. Yeah. And it's hard to judge because it is the highs were so unbelievably high, especially on the resume.
But they were such a short period of time.
But 116, and especially when you factor in that he did it twice. He had two runs, and he beat the Patriots twice.
And he should not have been, Super Bowl MVP discussion aside, in the merits of it, he shouldn't have been the Super Bowl MVP the first time. He really shouldn't have been.
Peyton Manning should absolutely not have been the Super Bowl MVP that first time against the Bears.
Bob Sanders.
Yeah, his numbers in that game were pathetic.
Yeah.
It was pathetic. It was like one touchdown, two interceptions. No way.
But he was one of the best, if not the best, for a very long time.
Yeah.
He absolutely was. There's a big difference there. Just because you win the championship twice in a team sport that isn't basketball.
It's just the quarterback is held in such high regard. And when you have two Super Bowl MVPs. And like we said, we both think he's getting in. I'd be the first ballot, though, no. 116 and 116, no.
The only thing you ever...
First ballot, no way. Effing way.
The only thing you ever led the league in your career was interceptions, and you did three times.
Yeah,
that doesn't smell like greatness to me.
If he ultimately gets in, I won't bang my fist on the table. I'll get it. Okay, I understand. I won't agree, but I'll get it.
I'll give up on the Hall of Fame
if he
officially because I'm damn close.
Well, then you'll go crazy if he gets in the first ballot.
That I don't care about. I've never first ballot, second ballot. He has to wait 5 years.
But I don't like Ty Law. He was tortured waiting.
I know he should have gotten
in. There's no way a guy like that should get in without any stress. No way.
Yeah. Unless it's something like we can only bring in three guys every year, then first ballot starts to actually mean something.
Yeah.
But it really doesn't because you can have, eight guys?
All right, real quick. Red Sox, season over. Let me ask you this. Did you care at all about the Mike Yastrzemski storyline this past week?
No.
I didn't care at all.
Am I a bad person because
I didn't care at all?
No, because first of all, you, like me, were born after Carl Yastrzemski retired.
Correct.
I don't have this great draw. He had a great career. Didn't win anything.
I tweeted out.
Sorry. I just don't. I don't hold them in the highest esteem when you don't win at all. And I don't have this overwhelming love for Carl Yastrzemski that's going to translate down into... Why does it sound like you're punching the keyboard in there?
Typing. Okay.
For his grandson.
Look.
The hell do I care?
I'm sure my dad thought it was a cute, cool story, but I couldn't have cared less. I just couldn't. Am I a bad person?
No.
I didn't get chills.
Maybe you are a bad person.
I didn't get chills when he saw his grandpa on the field. It's a cool story. I'll tell you what, it was the best thing I heard. In his first game... that first game of the series, he hit a foul ball, and this girl who I used to work with, Ruthie Polinsky at WPRI, who I used to work with, her boyfriend's father caught the foul ball, and he is also from Andover, Mass. So I thought that was cooler than anything else that happened. Look, the home run, I get it. He was a Red Sox fan, Yastrzemski over the loudspeakers. That's nice and nostalgic. I just didn't care. Yeah. I didn't care. It was an ex-player's kid that's playing.
Grandkid.
I mean, are we going to go crazy? I know he wasn't a legend. Are we going to go crazy if Mike Vrabel's kid comes back and plays at Gillette Stadium after he's at BC, after he's finished playing there for the Vikings?
I don't care.
You know, like, whatever.
The only time I would ever care, and I'll say this for you, is if Christian Fourier's kid came out. And the only reason I would ever care, I met him. Nice kid.
Okay.
Great kid.
That's great.
I want him to succeed.
Look, I get
the rest of them, I never met you. I don't know you, let alone your grandkid or your son. What the hell do I care?
We're not old
enough. Can you help the team win? That's all I care about.
You know, it's been a bad year. The beat writers are looking for stories, so they were hammering this one. I understand. Personally, though, I didn't care that Yaz's grandson was playing at Fenway.
No.
Didn't care, you know? Now, if Yaz's grandson, you know, joined the Red Sox and then hit for the Triple Crown, well, then I'd say, oh, look at that. That is, wow. That's different. I mean, but just because he came and played at Fenway, I mean, cool. But I just didn't care.
Yeah, but and his grandfather played before either one of us were alive.
Yeah.
So we don't have that connection. We're like, oh my God, 67 was so great. Oh. You didn't win the World Series. How great was it?
Especially coming from our perspective.
Stop having
you lost. We got four rings. We don't even know what you're talking about.
2 years ago, you're having a 40-year anniversary of a team that didn't win at all. It's friggin' pathetic.
Oh, man.
Absolutely. Red Sox fans are sometimes absolutely pathetic.
All right, let's do the producer's question. Devin, here we go.
All right, guys, the question of the week is...
our favorite Rocky movie?
Yes, definitely.
Is it?
Yeah.
No.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
All right, there's an easy answer to that.
Wait, is that really the question?
No.
Oh.
No. I was in the middle of the question, but the question of the week is...
yeah, we don't need the Rocky music anymore.
Okay.
Go ahead. Question of the week.
Question of the week is that the Red Sox need to keep one of these guys. Who would you guys rather keep? Mookie Betts or J.D. Martinez?
All things being equal, Mookie Betts. That's a really easy decision.
Mookie Betts.
I mean, Jesus.
Don't make these sports questions. We do enough sports. Yeah, these are supposed to be random questions.
Again, remember when we first talked about this, Devin?
Yes.
We threw out like, hey, it was at the time when like 2 million people signed up to Storm Area 51.
Yeah.
It was like, find a question based off of that.
But Mookie Betts is the answer here. J.D. Martinez
and Devin,
is older.
We could have had a callback to our first discussion because it's that time again. Area 51.
Yeah.
You could have thrown it in there.
Yeah.
Maybe next week.
Nah, maybe not. Mark, do you believe in aliens?
No.
Really?
I don't know.
Okay, I will answer it. I 100% believe in aliens. Now, do I believe aliens have visited Earth? No. Not a chance. Do I believe that there's intelligent life outside of our one tiny little marble? Absolutely.
There's got to be something
way
that's
too
living.
Damn big.
There's got to be, but are you talking about
I'm talking
with
about
big
intelligent.
Eyes?
Who the hell knows what they actually look like?
I do think that somewhere on some other planet, something is living.
I think there's intelligent life.
Yeah, I don't know.
Beyond just single-celled organisms, I think there's intelligent life on other planets. Do I think they visited here? No. Do I think these UFO sightings are aliens? No.
But don't you think if there was some form of intelligent life, you would know about it?
Can I just put this out
there? I mean, we know what the mass of the sun is. We know how hot the sun is.
Yeah, but we also know that it takes light years, which is a lot longer than an Earth year, light years to get from one solar system to another. We know there's no other intelligent life in our solar system, but there's thousands of other solar systems, thousands of other suns with planets revolving around them. Think it's possible?
You see, now you're taking me down some road here because it's how big is the universe? What else is out there? I mean, there has to be something out there.
I don't think they've been coming to our planet, kidnapping us, and probing our butts to find out how we operate and work. I don't think that's true.
No.
I don't think any of these UFOs
are alien
spacecraft.
Yeah.
It's simply what it is. It's an unidentified flying object, which means they can't clearly tell that was a weather balloon. You know what I'm saying?
But also, do you think in about a decade from now, we could be riding in UFOs?
No, because we'd know what they are. They wouldn't be unidentified. People need to understand that that's what that phrase, unidentified flying object, if we know it, if we see what it is, then it's not unidentified flying object. Are you saying could we be flying in alien technology like they did in Independence Day?
Yeah, like a decade from now.
No. Nope. Nope.
No,
nope,
because,
nope.
Well, go look at this. I mean, what was the Jetsons' perspective of the world when it's, you know, in 2000? I mean, when did the Jetsons come out? They thought everybody would be flying 60s. Around in 2000.
And having robot maids.
We're not
yeah.
flying around. So
easy. Some of us have robot maids.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Don't easy. Know where you guys grew up.
A robot lover.
He does?
I think so.
Okay. Sweaters for kids.
All right.
I got nothing left.
See, I need to think more about this.
Aliens?
I'll get back to you.
Get back to me.
Okay.
In November.
Take the points in the Patriots tomorrow. Minus 23. I think the Patriots are minus 23. I'm telling you. That's my pick of the weekend. I take the points. I think they're going to beat the Jets. I think it would be a major upset if the Jets cover that spread. That's all. All right. We'll be back next week. We'll see how the Jets and Patriots game goes. And I mean, can any team keep it close? We'll continue to discuss that and the Patriots and their offensive line, defense, and the march to an undefeated season. This is
you
the Mark and
it.
Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.